It's time for Lunch Hour Reviews.
Creatures who feast upon the flesh of their victims.
I ate his liver with some fava beans.
Soylent Green, nice made out of people.
Feeding time.
I'm Mindy.
And I'm Darren, and we are the Rants Macabre, a part of the Fangoria Podcast Network. For more information about the network, including other programs, how to follow the show, and find past episodes of the Rants Macabre, please visit fangoria.com. So this last Sunday, Fear the Walking Dead wrapped up its six-episode sort of half
season. Which I hate. Like, I hate these, like, half-season shenanigans. This is not England. I demand 22
this
episodes.
This isn't a series. It's a show.
It's a TV show.
The first season.
I don't understand why we have to do that. Also, I wanted more.
Yeah, it did. The biggest frustration was that it felt like it was just getting started.
Right. And I'm going to forget all of this by the time it goes next year.
It's going to be rough. So I just rewatched the last season of The Walking Dead, and those moved.
Right. That's amazing. Was that season 5 or 4? I get confused
5.
Now.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a great season.
Having to recap Fear the Walking Dead, I might be a little more frustrated because of how slow paced
and
it was.
And I was willing to accept it, and I liked it. I liked the slow pace of it. So, and especially the very last episode, it really made the whole thing worth it to me.
Yeah, I've got some conflicting opinions, but we'll get into all those. So Fear the Walking Dead was meant as a spin-off show, for those who don't already know. It was meant to be the story as the disease began. Mm-hmm. So in The Walking Dead, obviously Rick Grimes is sort of down and out for the worst of it.
Yeah, he kind of, is that lucky or unlucky? I'm not sure.
I think it's crazy lucky.
Right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think it's crazy lucky. I mean, by some random happenstance, he might have just died. He might have taken bullet from a soldier and died. But so he sat it out very 28 Days Later style.
Right.
And reemerges and has to be informed that, like, oh, yeah, the shit is at the fan and the world has ended.
And he never has to make that moral dilemma of, like, is this a crazy person or a zombie? Is this just a slow-walking old person or a zombie?
Yeah, where a lot of people, especially, so in Fear the Walking Dead, one of my biggest frustrations is that we are playing in a universe where there has never been a zombie film made. The term zombie has never been used.
But that's also in Walking Dead, though. They pretend like they've never heard of zombies.
Yeah, and it's frustrating there, too. But it's just incredibly frustrating when you negate an entire like horror genre because it suits your film. It suits
that's
your story.
True. Except the kid in the very...
Who brings the knife
to
school.
Yeah, he knows that zombies are zombies. And I think that's kind of playing on that idea. I think that was as close as the writers would come to touching the fact that someone has heard of this before or someone knows about this before, maybe.
Yeah, and it almost verges on, like, that he's indulging conspiracy theory by, like, following the news out of, like, the Midwest where this thing is beginning.
Which, like, I mean, to be honest, remember when everyone was doing bath salts and eating each other?
Yeah.
I thought to myself, ooh, maybe.
It's beginning. Yeah.
Maybe.
In Florida. Of course,
of
Florida.
Of course it's Florida. It's fucking course.
Okay, so we'll talk about a couple of the actors. Mm-hmm. So Cliff Curtis, who, as it turns out, is actually Maori, is darker skinned than me. I'm like a light-skinned Puerto Rican guy. However, Cliff Curtis plays everything from like Mexican gangbanger to sheiks.
Yeah.
So Middle Eastern type.
A lot of playing Middle Eastern. When I'm looking at his filmography here, there's a lot of Middle Eastern last names here.
Yeah. I'm pretty thrilled for him that like in this role, he doesn't have to do an accent. He's just an American guy. It's funny, his character, they've given a more ethnic name than he actually has.
Yeah, very much. It's
Travis Manawa. But yeah, so in the story, I thought he was married, but it turns out they're just boyfriend, girlfriend, living together.
Mm-hmm.
His new squeeze is Kim Dickens, who I know from Sons of Anarchy, and she's...
Deadwood, she's a big...
Okay.
That's where she comes from.
Yeah, so she's... a mother of two trying to hold it together. She's what, vice principal in the school?
I thought she was a social worker.
I think she's the vice principal.
Oh, I'm fucking...
Because she's, you know, she's sort of at
a
the
school that's
metal
like, it's
detector.
It's a huge school, though. They'll have like a million principals and vice principals.
Yeah.
So maybe she's one of those.
Yeah. She's not take very away good her power?
At her job. And she's not
she's great at her job. She recognizes the nerd that we've already alluded to,
who
brings a knife into school, and she recognizes it from the bulge in his pocket. So I don't know. She was a prison guard before this.
Well, think about her son. Of course, she knows.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, being the mother of a junkie, you kind of get like eagle eyes. So she recognizes that like this kid isn't a threat to other students. So what the fuck is up? And he gives us a little bit of the exposition where there is some sort of outbreak happening in the middle of the country,
right,
and it's spreading. And he's scared. He's not bringing the knife into school to hurt somebody. He's, you know,
okay, but let's think about this where we don't know about zombies, right? Okay, let's just step back here. You have a teenager bringing a knife into school convinced that he needs that knife because of monsters.
Yeah.
So you just take it away and you don't tell anybody. Yeah, you don't tell anybody. You don't alert the psychologist on staff. You don't.
I think she kind of acknowledged the threat and addressed it. I don't know. She was going with her gut. It turned out she was right.
Well, like, yes, she turned out to be right. But let's say we don't know that zombies exist, which she doesn't know. You can't have crazy kids bringing a knife to school and being afraid of monsters.
Paranoid schizophrenic.
Absolutely. Shouldn't you tell that kid's parents? A note should have gone home or something. But then she couldn't write a note because she let the kid not get suspended, which I assume is a zero tolerance policy.
It sounds like zero strikes, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I give her credit. If I was that teenager, I would want the benefit of the doubt.
Obviously, I would want the benefit of the doubt, but there's a mental issue if you're afraid of zombies.
Okay, but I guess it also feeds into the idea that, yes, she is the mother of a junkie, and she is crazy accommodating to this son.
Yes.
With, you know, we'll say the
she's an enabler
disease of addiction.
Top-notch enabler.
So... yeah, we kind of, yeah, we're setting the tone that...
So now she's enabling kids to bring knives to school.
Well, you know, the kids who need it.
Yeah.
So if we follow her home, we're introduced to her daughter, and off somewhere in another part of town is her junkie son who's shooting up in an abandoned church. And that seems to be the first place in L.A. where anyone encounters a zombie.
Yes.
Where his, like, kind of girlfriend, they don't really get into it, but... he finds her eating one of his friends and flips out and runs away and gets hit by a car.
Right, right, right.
Everybody assumes that, like, oh, he's a crazy junkie talking about dead people eating other
people.
He
even assumes it for a little while that it's not a real thing that he saw or that things were different than he perceived them.
I kind of like how, like, for a junkie, he's actually quite lucid and with a sense of humor.
Yeah, no, he's very much willing to accept whatever comes his way.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
he's a
he
very existentialist.
Yeah, he really is. He's got he's out of everyone, he's kind of got his shit together. Because he knows what he is, he knows who he is, he knows how these things are affecting other people. He's a very great manipulator of the situation of people.
He's like a junkie through and through.
Absolutely.
How long do you think he was on drugs? It seems like long enough where
probably
the family is used to, like...
How old is he, 18?
He seems like maybe 19, 20, maybe. Mm.
I don't know, probably since he was 16, 14.
Yeah, probably since his parents divorced.
They didn't divorce. He died.
Oh, I thought he's alive.
The dad died.
Okay, he's not in the picture. Okay, well.
No, because he's dead. Not a zombie. Dead.
Okay, so maybe since then. That's his coping mechanism, heroin.
I just had a thought, though. You know how it's in people. And so when you die, you become a zombie in this universe.
Mm-hmm.
When did that start? Was it just like one day at this specific time? Everyone dead before stays dead. Everyone dead after comes alive.
Okay. So what you're referring to is the idea established in The Walking Dead that this massive contagion has infected everybody.
Right.
It can only reanimate the dead. However, you know, a direct bite and, you know, sort of into the bloodstream that can... become a fever that kills you. But yeah, everybody's contaminated, everybody's infected.
But is it since
when
a
did that
timeline?
Happen? Because it's also, I mean, it's got to be airborne,
right? And it's not a generational thing because old and young alike turn into zombies.
Yeah, I don't know,
just the thought that struck me as,
yeah, I mean,
like,
it seems to have spread nationally. What's the conspiracy theories about the chemtrails?
It's probably chemtrails. It's clearly, that's what it is. That's what's caused
there
this.
You go. If they didn't need any more paranoia in the chemtrails forums, but yes, that's how they're going to pass on the zombie.
For any more paranoia in the chemtrail like Reddits.
Okay, so in their home, we find out that Cliff Curtis's character is actually a divorced dad. So this I found fascinating because of all the like disaster survival type stories, I can't think of one that's firmly demonstrated what is, you know, roughly like 50% of, you know, American homes with kids mm-hmm. is that like there's divorce at stake. There's
right.
divorce
multiple
as a result.
Families.
Yeah, so when the shit goes down, you've got two families to worry about, and that's got to complicate things immensely in terms mm-hmm. of, like, who gets the priority, and how do you do that, and how do you get cooperation out of, you know, one half that might hate you?
Right, right. Because that's, yeah, it would be really tricky with, I mean, in Kim Dickens' situation, the husband is dead, her first husband is mm-hmm. dead, so there's not that, but like now you have to deal with the ex-wife, and that's gonna like you're dealing with zombies, you don't need to also deal with the ex-wife.
Yeah, although it does seem that like the when things get dramatic enough, people do sort of find their priorities, although the teenagers never stop being like selfish dickheads.
The teenagers, except for the junkie, are the worst characters ever.
Well, he's thinking about himself, but he's good at, like, staying under the radar.
Well, no, he's great, but the son from Cliff Curtis's son and the daughter of Kim Dickens, like, I mean, that daughter deserved to get eaten, like, a million times, and I was really mad that she didn't.
Yeah, I didn't feel that strongly about her one way or another.
I thought Randy from The Wire was gonna, like, eat her. And I was like, okay, great.
Yeah, I was so hoping that he would play a bigger part.
Me
but
too.
But they just kind of let him go. Yeah. Nah.
Yeah.
A random side note. The main, it's not really a theme, but like the main stinger that,
okay.
that plays over the credits was done by Atticus Ross, who Trent Reznor from Nine Inch Nails worked with on all the soundtracks to like Gone Girl, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and The Social Network. So mm-hmm. all David Fincher movies.
You know what that sounds like, though, to me? And, I mean, I think it sounds great. It's a great opening sequence that they've put together. But it's, like, to me, like a dead ripoff of American Horror Story. The very first time you ever heard that screaming sound in the opening credits was that first American Horror Story.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's very short, though. I mean,
to me, it's like, that's that. It's mm-hmm. very much the same to me.
Yeah, I like it.
It's
funny, for as like slow and paced as the show is, the opening credits are very like
exciting.
Fast. Let's get to it.
Yeah, the opening credits are very exciting, but I like the slowness of it. I like that it actually takes the time to really evaluate the characters and really get into the characters, which is something like, you know, in Walking Dead, I think everyone loves Daryl Dixon, but I don't fucking know really anything about him.
No, well, he's a unique case where he's really tight-lipped about anything having to do with himself.
I don't think I ever really knew, except for one time, that Andrea was a lawyer. One time I was told that. But it's a pretty important part of someone's, you know, life.
Yeah.
I feel like on Walking Dead, they're so busy just fighting for survival every single day.
Which is why I like it.
I understand. But you don't actually know anything about it. And I feel like these people have been together for 5 years. How long is the Zombiegeddon going in season 5 now? 4 years?
I think closer to 3 years, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they've been together for a long time. There's not fighting for your life every single second of the day.
Yeah. And this is just a side note. So Fear the Walking Dead is not based on any graphic novel, but Robert Kirkman is executive producing, and I noticed mm-hmm. that he did write some episodes. So it's definitely, you know, the creators at the heart of this show, but there isn't the graphic novel to sort of fall back on in The Walking Dead. It's funny, everything you mentioned. So Daryl Dixon was an invention of mm-hmm. the showmakers. Mm-hmm. He's not in the comic books. But Michonne, her character throughout the comic books, like, you get a good bit of her story. And mm-hmm. it's funny, she was actually the lawyer. She was a lawyer, and she like
right,
did some fencing
right.
so in college,
becomes,
so she was good with a sword. But so this show, we only have what they give us. And the first episode really does set the groundwork. It's funny. It is a family drama
mm-hmm.
up to the last like 7 minutes of the show. And like, frankly, the last 7 minutes of the show were my favorite. That's where the family sort of sees, you know, first person the zombie contagion and the idea that, like, you know, they're not going down. But yeah, that said, a lot of these episodes kind of save the zombie exposure stuff for the last couple of minutes. Mm-hmm. And The Walking Dead got accused of that, I think, closer to like the second season.
Where it was
slower.
Dog shit season, that.
By episode two, the junkie son has fled the hospital.
Yes.
He's stolen the clothes of the dead guy next to him.
Which I love. Who's wearing like an old man, like windbreaker, Sid.
Yeah, it's the members only jacket. So he's off looking to score. The family is kind of, you know, they figure he'll come back or they'll find him at his old stomping grounds. But Cliff Curtis goes to his other family to sort of tell them what's what and sort of collect everybody because it looks like things are going down at this point. They were stuck on the highway. They don't really get the sense of the mass panic, but things mm-hmm. are getting bad. It's funny. In L.A., how could you even tell? If traffic is at a standstill, business is normal.
Yeah, I don't understand. Business as usual? No? But it's apparently like just a, like, I guess this is unusual.
A few extra helicopters more than normal?
I don't know. I honestly, if it was backed up on the GCP here, I wouldn't know. I would just say, oh, it's traffic.
Yeah.
You know, it wouldn't occur to me like zombies.
Yeah, at this rate, helicopters are going through my neighborhood now, like on a pretty daily basis. It's starting to really drive me nuts. And my neighborhood's not that bad.
No, I don't know. I wonder what they're looking for.
I don't know how many more helicopters it would take for me to, like, be afraid or panic or even check the news.
I assume always it's, like, a traffic helicopter. When I see them here, I think, oh, it's probably traffic.
Really? In Queens?
Yeah, on the GCP over there.
Okay, so in the second episode, zombies are still an unknown quantity. They mm-hmm. don't use the word. I don't think they did in the entire season.
No.
Okay, well. When the riot breaks out, and at this point, Cliff Curtis is with his second family, mm-hmm. right? They are split. They run into a barbershop where Reuben Blades, so American audiences... slightly less familiar with Reuben Blades because he's a character actor. He was in Predator 2.
He shows up in like Cliff Curtis shows up.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, he was in Once Upon a Time in Mexico, the Robert Rodriguez movie. But, you know, Spanish people know him as like a mega pop star singer. But in any case, he's, I don't know, I like seeing him here and he's old enough where he's kind of weathered. Kind of crotchety guy. He reluctantly helps them.
I hate him. I think he's such an asshole. Like, I wouldn't take him along.
Really? I think he's pretty resourceful.
No, I wouldn't take him. There's no room for assholes in my troop.
I think it's going to take a couple assholes to make it out.
There's a couple. I don't know. His style of asshole is not what I enjoy.
I think he even says it in the show, but he says good people are the first to die.
It's true. And I'm not saying you have to be nice, but like he goes out of his way to be a dick.
And I think he's
like
defensive.
Very combative.
I can't argue that, I guess. Well, no, he's not so combative that he's, like, going after people. He's just, when it comes to, like, am I going to protect my family regardless what it means to you? Yes. It's always about his family.
I don't know. I think I hate him.
You're allowed. So because it's in L.A., there's an interesting subtext that when cops do encounter a zombie and open fire, the public look at that like, what the fuck is your problem? Like, that was a human being you just executed in the street and shot 34 times. And so, you know, actually, sadly, if it was New York, it would still
it
be the same sort
to be
of stigma.
Like anywhere in the States now, I feel like.
Yeah. So in L.A., when this happens, people are slow to recognize what's actually happening and actually go against the police, and riots ensue. Mm-hmm. And so it's, you know, the L.A. riots all over again, and that's what Cliff Curtis and his family are fleeing, and they start burning shit down.
Right.
And they have
As to you do.
Jump in the truck. Yeah, I don't get the lighting shit on fire impulse, but...
Well, and that was, yeah,
like
something...
Disneyland for pyromaniacs.
In one of the last episodes, you get an aerial shot of L.A.
Yeah.
And there's all these fires and shit.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking, like... What's causing these fires? Are people just lighting fires? Are candles like people falling asleep to cigarettes? Like,
it's
what
like
is
the
happening?
Purge. It's like the purge.
But why are we lighting fires?
It's Molotov cocktails through. No, it's like Molotov cocktails through windows and just, you know, spiting and breaking windows and yeah, fucking shit up.
Oh, I don't like that.
Don't live in L.A. during a zombie apocalypse.
Okay, fine. I just to me, like, loot, sure, but burn shit down never makes sense to me. also it might come back on me. I don't know. I might get burnt.
Yeah, I don't think anybody who does it is thinking long term.
Yeah, it's like danger. It's very, it's a dangerous thing to do. I don't recommend it.
Yeah, the second episode is pretty slow in terms of action and dynamics. You just kind of get informed that, like, you know, when the mom goes to her job, the school is empty. Like, the kids are,
everyone's,
you know,
getting
not
the
being
flu
sent.
Or whatever.
Yeah. So at school, she has her showdown with the principal.
Yes.
She runs into the kid who had the knife in the first episode. And I just didn't believe that he was there at all. It was a weird sort of, let's just bring him back to show everybody he was right.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, he's back at school asking for his knife. Was that the only knife in your home?
Yeah, come
what
on.
Are you
they
doing?
Got a whole set of knives. Like,
yeah. And
on.
That was a relatively small one. But in any case, whatever. He recognizes what was going on and he defends
he's
her from the principal.
He's not going to last long.
No, he seemed like he was on his own, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, where's his parents?
He's a goner. I don't... doesn't... I
don't
think he's
making noises.
I don't think he's going to fare well. Okay. So, for episode 3, at the top, I wrote myself this note. Are you ready to watch these new characters make age-old mistakes? Like, they just kind of run through the motions that we've seen in every other movie. And
it's true.
They're still playing them like... None of them have even seen a scary movie.
No, they don't. Scary movies don't exist in Robert Kirkman's world.
No, it would seem.
Everything's just sunshine and lollipops all the time.
And it, I don't know. I wasn't wild about how the show was constructed in that they are bunkered down. The power keeps turning on and off.
Mm-hmm.
So first they hear like a tap, tap, tapping at their back door and they go to investigate. They get lucky that time because it was a dog.
Right.
It was a German Shepherd that had wandered into their backyard. So they let it in. It's covered in blood. They don't think it's its blood. It seems to be behaving fine. It goes to the front to bark at a zombie neighbor.
Which
who's
it needs to knock it off, which is what my dog's going to do and like
your
blow
zombies.
Up my spot for
yeah,
sure.
You can make all the fuss about who's on your team, but if your dog's on your team, you're going to die.
I know. It's true. She's just... that's a combative personality.
So I can't remember what draws them away from their home, but they do have a zombie neighbor that they go to investigate next door. And while they are next door, the daughter sees someone walk into their house
mm-hmm.
from the back. And again, they don't know it's a zombie. It's just a slow-moving sick person who makes a meal out of the dog. Now,
yeah.
I don't really buy that because
the dog would run away.
Yeah.
Unless maybe that was his dog and then his dog was like, oh, I don't know that you're dead.
Oh, that would make sense. Yeah.
Maybe. I don't.
Yeah. Uh-huh. The dog gives him the benefit of the doubt mm-hmm. just long enough to have him eat it.
Yeah.
So that's what they walk into, at which point Cliff Curtis and Reuben Blades have shown up with their families in tow. And
they're stupid families.
Oh, they were at the neighbors to get the shotgun. That's what it was.
So yes.
Now
except
they
for they
have...
forget the shells because they can't do things.
Yeah. Yeah.
They
had
at
to
all.
Spread
they can't
out.
Do things.
And also they put the wrong caliber into the shotgun.
Excellent.
I mean, in all fairness, they don't know what they're doing exactly.
Right, right.
But they put birdshot into the shotgun. And that's what Reuben Blades, he recognizes that, like, this guy is the Walking Dead. We got to get rid of this man. And everyone else is, like, trying to talk to their neighbor. Like, just
act right,
man. What you doing eating that dog?
I mean, I think if you'd never heard of a zombie before, you might be like, why'd you eat that dog?
I'd do so walking backwards out the door. I would not be walking towards him
I
curiously.
I think I might try and, like, thunk him on the head and tie him up.
All right. I think you're better. Yeah. You don't want to get any of that on you.
It's true. Lock him in the garage, maybe.
I think Reuben Blades made the right call. He shoots him with the shotgun initially, but it's birdshot, so it just makes a mess of his face.
Yeah.
How great was that
it was
practical
a huge
effect
mess.
On his face, like blown out with birdshot? That was pretty wild. And he's like that for a second or two, and they yeah. recognize that, like, no
These
person
kids are
with
stupid.
The flu... No person with the flu could just survive a shot to the face. And Reuben Blades gets up close and personal and blows the rest of his head off.
Makes a huge mess on the wall. On the
really
curtain.
Does. They
it's
spend
really
the next
gross.
2 days painting.
Yeah. Like, you can paint all you want, but that's just how that is.
So that was some of the only action on the third episode. And it was kind of forced. I wasn't wild about, like, here's the dog, here's the neighbor, here's the shotgun. Just... all these things coming together. But I don't know. You got a great zombie kill.
It was a good kill.
Yeah. It was
and you got to find out even more of a dick how much Reuben Blades is like even more.
Oh, he's a man who gets down to business.
I guess. You find out also how stupid the daughter is.
Yeah.
Which, like, you hated her all along, but I started really hating her then.
In the third episode?
Yeah. She's the worst.
She does have a pretty sad moment with the older brother where, like, everything that he's done to sort of fuck up the family, like, she's the kid left behind to sort of deal with the, you know, familial repercussions. And she tells him straight up, I hate you.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then she tries to walk out of the house and he has a seizure as, like, an extra, like, fuck you, stay home.
Yeah, yeah. Check me out. He's still wearing the dead man's clothes. So at the end of the third episode, that's when the military shows up.
I didn't see that coming.
No, but I've always said, and you disagree with me, but maybe now you'll listen. If the military shows up in a Zombageddon, run the other way. Avoid the military in a Zombageddon at all costs.
I used to be of a contrary opinion. I thought that in the event of a zombie apocalypse, like, go to, you know, Fort Dix, wherever is your nearest outpost.
Nope.
Because men with guns will keep you safe. That's their job.
No, they will not.
And it is kind of riot thinking where, like, I'm going to go home to protect mine. And you see that in a couple of the soldiers, and it's sort of compounded because they are so young.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these guys are, like, National Guardsmen who, you know, they're maybe 18, 19 years old.
Right.
And yeah, so they show up at the end of the third episode, and by the beginning of the fourth, they've
holding
set
the place
up
down.
They've set up an outer perimeter, and it's, you know, not exactly quarantine, that's somewhere else, but they are sort of doing sweeps and checking in on, like, the infected and really callously spray painting people's houses.
Yeah, kind of bossing people around. They're being real assholes.
Yeah, but again, like, young kids with
guns
power
when no one else has them. Yeah, forget about it. I mean, yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm not going to go towards the military. I'm going to hide from them in a Zombageddon, and I advise everyone to do the same. But the beginning of the fourth episode, the son Chris, this is Cliff Curtis's son, is sitting on the roof, and he's videotaping everything that's going on, which be useless when there's no power to charge that later, but whatever. Continue doing
you, kid. He's a teenager vlogging. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the stupidest thing ever. But he mentioned something about the military being their saviors. And right after he says saviors, you see a kid in the distance who I swear to God looks like Carl. Like, I think they did it on purpose. So they mentioned saviors so that we're already thinking about Negan and all that. Then you see a kid who
looks
exactly...
That's a deep cut for the comic book people.
Exactly like Carl. I swear to you. I rewound it because my husband caught it, and I was like, no, no. And then we rewound it. I mean, this kid looks like Carl right after they say savior. So.
I didn't notice that. I
mean, clearly it can't be Carl because he can't be on the other side of the country.
Right.
But I think it was put in there for people. Yeah, yeah.
I think it's a random coincidence. I really don't think it was done on purpose. But yeah, I mean, that's a number of things sort of lining up. Yeah, all right. Well, so he goes from his video diary on the roof. He recognizes that someone is reflecting light outside of their, like, safe perimeter.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's seemingly an SOS. I don't read Morse code.
Well, I know SOS, and I don't know. The guy was just flashing light, a mirror.
Yeah, it
it's
seemed
fine.
That way. Yeah. So he tries to convince everybody that there are people outside of their safe perimeter zone that need help.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the military is concerned, like, that's just zombie land out there.
Right. And he basically fucks that guy over because he tells Cliff Curtis, hey, there's this guy out here. And then Cliff Curtis sees that there's the guy flashing the mirror.
Yeah.
Cliff Curtis tells the military. The military is really rude to Cliff Curtis. And then they go. And the end of the fourth episode is when you see the military... You see the flashes from the guns that the military went to that house and kill that particular person.
Bummer.
Yeah. So don't tell people about... If you see people hidden in the distance, don't tell the military. Because that's me in the distance that you're ratting out.
So in the theme of bummers, this episode had one of the lowest points I've ever seen in a portrayal of a junkie. Mm-hmm. But the junkie's son goes to the neighbor who's like... slowly dying of heart disease, but he's got a morphine drip.
Yeah.
And this junkie goes to the neighbor's house. He pulls out the IV of morphine and sticks it between his toes.
Ugh.
And just, you know, spends a couple minutes getting really fucking high.
And he's been doing this. This is a thing that he's been doing for a little while.
He's been doing it enough that the pills that his mother went through a hard time getting at the school
from the
nurse's office.
He's like, I don't even need that. He's pretending like he's cool and clean.
He's pretending he kicked.
Yeah, yeah.
A day before he was seizing
and
going through
withdrawals. This isn't appropriate, you know? His mom should know this isn't right.
Yeah, yeah. Anytime a junkie is like, don't worry about me, I'm cool.
I'm totally
fine.
It's like,
you keep your eyes, you keep that person clapping at all times so
you
know where they are.
But I love him. I think he's really my favorite character on the show, because I think I think if you had never known a person, a heroin junkie, which I like to call them like old fashioned junkies, because they're like train spotting junkies, like they're
not
1990s
meth
old fashioned junkies.
Okay.
And so if you've ever known like an old fashioned junkie, they're squirrely as fuck. And it looks like the kid's overreacting. But when you really know these people or come in contact with these old fashioned junkies, they're squirrely, just like him. He's not overacting at all. He's doing the exact right amount of acting. I just love him. I think he's great. And I think he's doing such a great job, because he's so shady and he's so, you know, squirrely and always looking out of the corner of his eye.
It's kind of a gamble accurately portraying a junkie on a show, because your impulse is just to go like, fuck that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And the show does kind of push and pull that, like, only his mother loves him.
Right.
Everyone else is tired of his shit. Mm-hmm. You know, the Cliff Curtis is kind of doing his best to, like, keep up.
Right.
But he, you know, everybody would prefer this guy just fucking die.
Yeah.
Go somewhere and never come back.
It's sad, but I think... And again, in the way that... I mean, and he's a very well-acted character, but he's a very well-written character... I think in that he does, you know, have moments of clarity and honest remorse for being the way he is. And
yeah,
he has
at,
that
at
bond.
Moments as it goes with the junkie, like you are in, you know, as long as you are in front of another person who you feel guilty in front of, you
right.
will be guilty. But the moment that thought is gone, you're just like, oh, I need to shoot up. Like,
yeah,
it's
I'm
going to
go
long.
Steal something.
Yeah.
I'm going to continue wearing this dead man's clothes, which still see in episode 4 and moving on into episode 5, he's still wearing the clothes.
When they take him away, he's still wearing the clothes.
He, for a small amount of time, does not wear the clothes when he gets in the pool.
When he's first at home, yeah.
Yes, but then puts the dead clothes back on.
So towards the end of the 4th episode, the mom goes out to like the Forbidden Zone,
mm-hmm.
jumps a fence to spend some time out there and see what's up. I guess she believes her son that someone's off in the distance and needs help. But she hides from the military. She seemingly kills some zombies.
Yeah.
She's, you know, taking it all in. But you're not really sure, like, what she's up to. You know, most of it happens off camera. I just thought it was funny that mom jumps a fence. Who's
mom? She's kind of very proactive.
Yeah.
Compared to Cliff Curtis, who's, you know, kind of the worst, weakest link. In, I mean, besides... the daughter,
he's
the second weakest link.
He's like a play it by the book. Like, let's work with the military. Yeah, he's doing what he thinks is right. He's sort of playing diplomat between families and the military.
Yeah, but that's not going to... You're not going to survive the zombie
apocalypse.
He
found it out the hard way.
Yeah, after he's like gambled with someone else's life. Then he realized, oh, this is a bad fucking idea. Good thing it wasn't me. Yes, it's a good thing, Cliff Curtis.
Well...
good thing your wife, like, actually steps up and murders some zombies around here.
Yeah. Yeah, that comes into play. So in the 5th episode, I noticed it was named Cobalt.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered why for the first half of the episode. But so in this episode, we get the first glimpse at the soldiers who are kind of figuring that their job isn't really worth the danger they're in. And
mm-hmm.
they don't believe in the mission. So they are peacing out. And, you know, they get the shit kicked out of them by their commanding
right.
officer, because you can't just... go AWOL.
I kind of think in the Zombageddon you can. Maybe not at the beginning, though.
Their captain disagreed.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't like this turn. This was kind of the beginning of a lot of terrible decision-making, and I don't really see how they get away with the rationalization of
okay.
kidnapping a soldier
yeah.
to lie and make up that they're going to exchange him for the family that they've had stolen from them.
Mm-hmm.
So Reuben Blade's wife... who suffered an injury during the riots,
she was taken away because the infection on her foot got pretty bad. And during the health screenings, they find out that the son is a confirmed junkie.
Right. So now he gets hauled away as well.
Wearing his old man clothes.
Of course. He's not going to change. Wouldn't that be so sad? You're like, get on a TV show, your first like TV show. Well, I don't know. Maybe this is just me, but like your first TV show and they're like, this is your costume. And you'll be like, okay, well, what do I wear on the other days?
This must be a mistake. You've given me Ruben Blades, 65-year-old man's wardrobe.
These clothes don't even fit. And they're like, no, this is your costume.
And his hair is like greasy and stringy.
His hair is so gross.
I feel really bad for him in that sense.
Yeah, because sometimes I'm like, maybe he's good looking, but you can't really tell with the dead man
clothes. I think he's a very handsome guy, but they're just short of fucking up his teeth like Bubs in The Wire.
Yeah.
They are pushing the heroin thing quite a bit. Yeah, so once those people are taken away, everybody's sort of scrambling for how to get them back.
Right.
They are in some crazy quarantine zone in a gym, you know, a couple miles away.
Mm-hmm.
Ruben Blade's solution is to kidnap, torture, and interrogate one of the army officers, kind of using his daughter in a honeypot scenario.
It's true, which I don't know. I feel like if they would have continued with using the daughter like that, the guy would have just told him what was what, and they would have gotten out just fucking fine. You don't need to straight razor his arm.
Yeah, and like I said, this is the beginning of me doubting everything that's happening. Like, I wasn't wild about this writing. I didn't think it really worked.
I didn't understand. Yeah, because the guy would have told them.
Yeah.
You don't need to cut his arms.
And up to this point, maybe I missed it. Maybe it was more subtle than I realized. But the establishment of using like code words over the radio, and we haven't actually spent that much time with the military guys, but he sort of drops into the story. Your guys on the radio are using this term cobalt a lot. It's got to be important. It keeps coming up. What does it mean? And so that's the first time the audience has heard it. And we're just like, okay, it's important. What does it mean?
Yeah, what does that mean? I didn't care until you just said it just now.
Oh, you mean that thing we just mentioned just now?
Exactly. Oh, I'm on that. Because, like, come on. Like, I don't care. It's certainly not worth straight razoring anyone's arms for.
Yeah. So that turns out to be, like, the real point of his kidnapping. He doesn't actually think they're going to trade him to the military, what he's told his daughter, you know, is going to happen, especially because, like, they're kind of crushing on one another, whatever, they're teenagers who up to that point were making out. But now Cobalt reveals that, now this was some bullshit, Cobalt was a military effort to
they're going
to
kill everybody.
Yeah, but the term they use that's specific to Cobalt is the humane extermination of this corded off town.
Yeah, which, why?
Right. It's not...
Just fuck off.
So later, we get into the stadium, like, firebomb that shit. Yes. You've trapped a lot of zombies
that's
in
important.
One place. Set that place on fire. But this town is just kind of... They could have just abandoned posts.
That's
it
what
was
I'm saying.
Puzzling.
Like, why are we killing everybody?
Yeah, I don't buy that term. The extermination, you know, because they've got no better ideas. Like, just let them go.
Just walk away. This doesn't make any sense.
It seemed like the polar opposite of, like, the FEMA reaction during Hurricane Katrina, where, like, they didn't even show up for days. Here, they're just like, it's too much work. Just bomb them. Like,
yeah,
just
we'll just kill you all.
Humanely exterminate. Yeah, that was a weirdly dark plot twist that, I don't know, I thought it was kind of forcing
everyone's
hand.
That's what I'm
saying.
Stay away from the military and a Zombiegeddon.
Mm.
It's never going to go well. Which right, is also well, in my zombie plan why I get out of Manhattan. Because Manhattan,
yeah,
they're just going to close
easily.
Off the bridges and they're going to blow that shit up. Because
yeah,
that's
yeah.
how it's going to work.
Like I Am Legend. Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, I'm with you. I've become convinced.
Good.
The military is not the direction to go to. So, yeah. So, he does mention the, like, I don't know, is it the Staples Center? It's in L.A. It's a major.
I don't fucking know L.A.
It might be the local, like, college stadium, but in any case, it's filled with zombies. Ruben Blades goes to investigate,
right.
confirms.
Which I got really excited. Like, that was how the fifth episode ends, where you see the doors banging on the
yeah.
on the stadium, and I said, "Oh, this is gonna be amazing!
Filled to the brim.
This is gonna be amazing when this happens." And it fucking was. Come on,
it was the most ridiculous move on anyone's part to use that as a really a distraction for the military. Okay, so inside the military facility, which is also the quarantine zone, we get introduced to the bunkmate of the junkie son.
Right.
And he's a very polished African-American actor with expensive cufflinks who I didn't recognize from anything else.
No. Have I ever seen him before?
I don't know. We'll have to look him up. But he's got very expensive cufflinks. He's got a rapport with the local commanding officer.
He's a wheeler and dealer.
Yeah, he kind of ratted out one of his other cellmates or got him to break. And so the guy stole his watch in the process of throwing him in the hole or wherever he went. He talks about being able to sell anything except life insurance or something to that effect. Mm-hmm. But he's very slick. And he does recognize that the junkie son is actually gonna be useful to him. And so, you know, he's sort of always, you know, plotting and scheming. And so he has a conversation with him about being a junkie. And he says, give yourself a little credit. You were a heroin junkie. That's like the top bill junkie.
Right. And I loved that because it's true. It's a special type of junkie.
Yeah. I mean, for those who make it work for a long term, you develop a set of skills that, I mean, I wouldn't want to have.
And that's that old fashioned. I call that old fashioned junkie, that 1990s junkie.
It is. It's the transpotting junkie.
Yeah.
Do you want to buy a toaster at 3 o'clock in the morning?
Exactly. Yeah. That's the kind. The kind who puts morphine between their toes.
Oof. Outside of the compound, Reuben Blades has gone back. Well, he's convinced the family that we're going to go get our families back. We know that they're going to drop a bomb at 9 o'clock, so we got to do everything before then.
Mm-hmm.
He uses the Coliseum full of zombies as a distraction for the military. I will say it was a pretty badass moment when he rolls up to the guard tower and they, you know, they draw their weapons on him and they're shouting at him, "What the hell are you doing?"
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "Gentlemen, you're going to want to save your bullets for them." And that great reveal of, like, no kidding, a fucking St. Patrick's Day parade full of zombies.
We let them all out. And you guys put them there, so here you can have them back.
It was incredibly impractical.
It was awesome, though. I loved it. It was so smooth.
Okay, so once hell is broken loose and all military personnel are drawn to the gates,
mm-hmm.
any medical evac that was expected. So, yeah, I don't. Reuben Blades fucked a lot of people with that zombie parade.
Yes.
They can't get helicopters in.
He
ruins a lot of people's lives.
Those people were innocent people in the hospital. Gonna get evacuated.
And now they got the cattle prod deadening bolt gun.
A fancier one, though, than the other movie that they...
No Country for Old Men.
Yeah, this one was, like, fancy.
This one looked like a proper gun.
Yeah.
It was pretty creepy. But, yeah, so inside, Reuben Blades doesn't know that his wife has already died. She's just succumbed to the infection. She's died, and
right.
they didn't want her to come back as a zombie, so they bolted her in the head. But the junkie son is in there, and his partner has finagled a key to their particular cell. So they're going to make a run for it and not give a fuck about anyone else in that venue. So everybody sort of, you know, runs into one another after enough zombie killing. And it's just kind of like, you know, one of those scenarios where, like, all the variables had to align where everybody finds each other perfectly.
It works out well because it could have worked out really not well.
Yeah, I mean, if it was any kind of realistic.
Because Junkie and Strand are 2 seconds away from being eaten.
Yeah, behind a locked compound door, which they pull the old gag of, like, this magnetically sealed door, key card door, gives you the red beep on the first, like, six tries.
Yeah,
the
first six
swipes. I get it if it's, like, a busted old subway turnstile.
Right, this isn't the MTA.
Right.
Like, one and done.
Yeah, and this is a firm card. This isn't, a twerpy, bendy MTA card. In any case, it's played up for effect. And they get out by the skin of their teeth. Reuben Blade's daughter gets shot. Not a big deal.
Nope.
And they escape to Strand's place. He's, you know, the one who took the junkie son under his wing. And he is living large on the coast.
Yeah, fancy fucking house.
And apparently he's got a yacht in the water just waiting for him. And that's where the season ends. We don't know if they're going to take to the sea.
It appears that way because he says, "You guys can't stay here. We're all going on the boat."
I'd
be like,
"I'll
kind of
practical.
Fucking stay here. I'll stay here. You go on the boat. I'll wave. And we'll see how we do."
Yeah, I don't know. On a boat, I mean, I don't know the process really of desalinization, but it doesn't look easy.
Yeah, I don't know. You'll
eventually
about
run
boats.
Out of supplies on a boat. You could, well, I guess there's enough fishing, but
also there'd be lots of other rich assholes on boats. So then you're gonna
I don't
have
think it's
like
gonna get crowded on the
I
ocean.
Do. You're gonna have a problem with pirates. Everyone's gonna think this is a great fucking idea to ride on a
pirates
boat.
Is a
but
thing.
You're gonna have a pirate sitch.
I would love if Fear the Walking Dead becomes a pirate show.
That would be awesome, actually.
I would. I would. Next season, I'll be the one thrilled with it. Up to this point, I'm
you're
less...
like this show became a pirate show.
Yeah. So I don't know. We've got a lot to look forward to. It's only six episodes, which
I
is
enjoyed it though. I really enjoyed it, and I thought the last episode really was a great way to end.
I loved all the action. Mm-hmm. I just thought it was a little silly getting into the action and all the sort of story points that were kind of forced.
I mean, there were certain bad parts, and yeah, I would say Reuben Blades for me is just like, oh God, I really...
King of the zombie parade.
I just do not like that. I want it to be like the Junkie and Strand show. Blonde mom can
That's
come
funny.
Too.
That's funny.
Everyone else fuck off.
Yeah, I would actually, yeah, there you go. The Junkie and Strand show. It's just kind of, yeah, he's almost like his sort of twerpy henchman who's like, go fetch me that.
Right.
Okay, master, just more heroin, please.
Exactly.
Okay, so that was our recap of Fear the Walking Dead, this first half of a season of season one. I guess I'm looking forward to the second half of this.
You
I think,
know you
I think
are.
The show will be more ironed out by then.
You are.
But in any case, that's it for us. We are The Rants Macabre. We are at The Rants Macabre. That is our website, therantsmacabre.com. We're on social media. We are on Facebook and Twitter at Rants Macabre.
You've been listening to The Rants Macabre, a presentation of the Fangoria Podcast Network, produced by Darren Rosario and Thomas DeFeo, and executive produced by Ken Hanley of Fangoria Entertainment. For press opportunities, advertising inquiries, and information about The Rants Macabre, contact Ken at fangoria.com.
This is me, Darren, signing off.
And this is Mindy. Thanks.